Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So President Trump calls on Jeff Sessions and receives no answer. The call to stop the rigged witch hunt right now before it continues to stain our country any further. Bob Mueller is totally conflicted, and his 17 angry Democrats that are doing his dirty work are a disgrace to USA! Exclamation point.
Exclamation point.
And of course, this tweet set off a bit of a firestorm yesterday, with the Democrats claiming this is prima facie evidence of obstruction. This against the backdrop of stories that have come out that the wrangling between Mueller and Trump's legal team continues. They would like to question President Trump both orally and in written form on the matter of the topic area of obstruction of justice.
Well, I mean, you have to ask, is he obstructing or is he fighting back? That's what Sarah Sanders said. He's not. There's no obstruction because Trump's tweets aren't official statements. Or are they?
Doesn't matter if they're official statements or not. Jonathan Turley makes the point. This isn't an obstruction. Tweets are not obstruction of justice.
Well, that's what the left is claiming, because the left is wrong again.
Well, right. I mean, the point is that
let's get it out there early.
Subjects, even targets, do not surrender their First Amendment rights.
Well, Jeff Sessions, where was he? He was in some southern state yesterday, and he was joking. Excuse me. He was having fun with this. Stand by. And
I think most of it is about.
And that's not it. Maybe this one.
People are complaining about us coming there.
No, that's not it either.
He used the word should. He didn't use the word must. He didn't direct him to do it. And he's not going to direct him to do it.
That's his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, last night. Here's Jeff Sessions.
He can send out orders pretty quick if you don't. And he's serious about it. We salute.
Did you understand that?
Sort of. The question then is, answer this question both substantively and politically, because there may be different answers. Should Jeff Sessions accede to President Trump's suggestion and fire Bob Mueller at this stage? Should Jeff Sessions violate his recusal, fire Bob Mueller, or direct Rod Rosenstein to do it, in which case Rod Rosenstein would probably have to be fired too, because I suggest he wouldn't go along with it.
Oh, yeah.
And you have this daisy chain that is set off by any such action in furtherance of the president's tweet. Should he do it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line.
He should, because there's nothing there. Paul Manafort trial has nothing to do with Russian collusion or President Trump. It's about tax evasion and bank fraud. That's what that is about. They haven't even mentioned in 2 days of the trial, besides the ostrich jacket that they've mentioned and his lavish spending, the name Trump hasn't even come up once. And then there's Michael Flynn. And then there's Michael Cohen. So the list goes on and on with people who are associates of Trump's and have nothing to do with Russian collusion.
Well, Paul Manafort being tried for crimes other than those related to any Russian criminal conspiracy doesn't mean necessarily, we don't know, it doesn't mean necessarily that there's no connection there. Remember, we've talked to Andy McCarthy and others that suggest this is, you know, the ultimate squeeze play is continuing with this prosecution, Manafort facing effectively a life sentence, potentially, under the sentencing guidelines for the crimes with which he is charged. And we'll see how it plays out. And, of course, that's what Democrats and even some Republicans are going to say. Let it play out. Don't interrupt the investigation. If there is nothing to be concerned about, then just go on about your day And frankly, the more that Bob Mueller flails, the more the time goes on with no evidence produced in furtherance of the claims that the likes of Adam Schiff or Dick Durbin are wont to make, well, that just benefits you as it diminishes Mueller's credibility. So why be so obsessed about it? Other than rhetorically as sort of a way to convey how unserious the Democrats are, way to challenge some of what they're saying. But otherwise, are you stepping on the good news being produced by the administration, like, for example, the economy's performance, by obsessing about this, much less suggesting something that would immediately dominate the news and, frankly, the news from now, at least until the midterms?
Right. Robert Mueller has a counteroffer. Yesterday, late afternoon, he said that he'd offer to reduce the number of obstruction-related questions. But the caveat is he wants to address President Trump in person and not in written answers.
Yeah, so the negotiation goes back and forth over the same topic area.
But would you ever sit down with Robert Mueller if you didn't have to?
No, I wouldn't advise Trump to do that.
Yeah, because I don't know if he could control himself.
But going back to whether this should, whether Sessions should
end it,
should end it, or Trump
pull the plug.
There's Trump even suggesting it, and then there's actual movement and furtherance of it. I think it would be politically unbelievably damaging. So you can make this, this is why I said, separate the substance, you know, in a vacuum. Does Trump have a point that this rigged witch hunt, as he calls it, should come to a conclusion in the not-too-distant future, some reasonable point? Yeah, he does. There's no evidence that's been produced. And, I mean, even the likes of Juan Williams will concede that. But we don't know what we don't know in terms of all the machinations behind the scenes, what's not being made public, what the special investigator and his team are doing. But so substantively, there's a case to make. Politically, I don't see the case at all. I don't see this as helpful at all. The one thing that Trump could do, and he should be challenged to do, maybe he should be advised to do, is something that's been suggested by Andy McCarthy, by the Wall Street Journal editorial board, by a number of quarters, including ours. It's declassify some of these documents. Declassify, you know, the look what happened when the public, got at least a redacted version of the FISA application that had been submitted to surveil Carter Page.
That was an easy beach read.
Yeah, well, it also served to make the president's case to further call into question the FBI and the DOJ, particularly against the backdrop of Carter Page still not being charged with anything. Again, pending matter. Everything's a pending matter. It seems to me that that would be so much more productive is to declassify and release documents in these particular topic areas that would further inform the public, ostensibly, further call into question what the Democrats are saying, what DOJ, FBI under President Obama did, what the Mueller team is doing. That's such a better play than, you know, calling on your attorney general through Twitter to violate his recusal and start firing people and create a firestorm at a real firestorm, not just a one-day rhetorical one on cable news channels, a real firestorm at Department of Justice, and guarantee your impeachment if Democrats take the House, which you would be acting in furtherance of with the termination of Mueller prior to the completion of his investigation. Politically, I just don't see it making any sense, so I don't see the utility of Trump's tweet yesterday.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
I'm sure you're up to date on this breaking news story, Dan. Did you sleep last night? Could you, knowing that the Swedish crown is gone?
I hope Stefan Edberg has an alibi.
Well, the Swedish royal family, a lot of pain this morning. So are the people of Sweden, because not only are the queen's crowns gone and this ode. Do you know what the ode is? I didn't know what an ode was until I, the ode, the staff, you know?
Scepter.
That thing. Yeah. Unbelievable heist. They took these items from a 900-year-old church. There was a motorboat, open canvas motorboat, that's an open-air motorboat, parked right outside. They steal the crown and the ode, get in the motorboat, speed away. They're looking for them by land, sea, and air. And here's one of the eyewitnesses. Or is he a suspect?
We were having lunch just over there, and one of my friends, she saw two people running, a man from this direction and a man from that direction. Mm-hmm. And then could see, I saw the boat was there, a white little boat with an outboard motor on the back. The two men hurriedly jumped on board, and it sped off in that direction over that way. And we then contacted the police and told them, and they told us that they had taken something from the cathedral. I knew immediately that they were burglars because of the way they were behaving. Yes. The fact that they met like that and the boat was waiting and the way that it moved away, it was obvious to me that they were burglars. So that's why I said, call the police.
It's riveting. It's like a scene from the Thomas Crown Affair. Yeah. I don't think that guy had that guy barely had the energy to get his story out, much less actually conduct the heist.
Well, anyone with information has to call police.
Everybody's so lethargic in Sweden
they're just
because they're
contemplative.
You know,
they're just
they're
it's
welfare states.
A beautiful summer day.
They're wards of the state. Oh. I wonder if it's the group with which I used to be affiliated. It's a libertarian rabble rousing group in Stockholm, Frihetsfronten.
A Frihetsfronten?
That's what I said.
Yeah. That would be bad if it turned out to be a group you have been associated with.
That's when I bartended. That's the group
I supported
with my bartending skills at an underground rave when that word was appropriate.
They say one of the suspects rode his bike to the scene.
Of course.
Then took the jewels and then got in the motorboat.
Of course he did. Of course he rode his bike.
I blame Annika Sorensen.
Sweden.
They showed the bike, and it had a little basket on front and
part
a bell.
Yeah. As long as...
It was such a nice bicycle.
As long as Bjorn Borg somehow isn't involved. That's the important thing.
They drove away in a Volvo.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. The Republicans control all of Washington, D.C. When was the last time the Republicans actually cut government spending? We'll answer that when Freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So Sarah Sanders was asked yesterday about the treatment that Jim Acosta at CNN got at the Trump rally in Tampa the other day. Was it wrong? Was it wrong to pick on poor, defenseless Jim Acosta? Would the president like to denounce those who callously said, CNN sucks?
And no broadcaster was broadcasting state secrets. They were trying to do stand-ups at a public rally, and you had people trying to yell over them, preventing them from doing their jobs, and yelling that their network sucks on live TV.
Look,
does the White House support that or not?
While we certainly support freedom of the press, we also support freedom of speech, and we think that those things go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Eric Bolling was on Newsmax TV, and he looked wonderful, by the way, and I was so glad to see him and hear his voice. He said, CNN doesn't blank, but Jim Acosta does as a reporter.
Wow, that's such a powerful distinction.
It is a difference.
Uh-huh.
There are some solid reporters at CNN. I know you don't think so, but I think you're kind of warming up to Gloria Vanderbilt's son, Anderson Cooper.
So who are they?
Anderson Cooper, Randy, the woman that was here that... did the interview when we were here, and I can't remember her last name.
Wow. This is a great example. Randy, somebody who works at CNN.
Randy. You know
Randy. Really holding up the flag there.
You've met Randy.
Yeah.
What's Randy's last name? She's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they have an opinion. They have an agenda, just like Fox News has an opinion and has an agenda. So I don't want CNN to go away because I want to know what the left is thinking and what they're saying. I cannot stomach MSNBC. I can't watch it. Unwatchable, so I watch CNN.
Well, CNN's existence or non-existence is a market-driven issue. Their ability to, you know, make a profit, things they otherwise decry when other people do the same. So I'm not exactly sure why we're talking about CNN going away or not going away. What does that have to do with Trump?
Well, no, you're asking if Jim Acosta, you said CNN sucks. And I don't feel like CNN sucks. I don't think Jim Acosta sucks, but other people do, and that's their opinion.
Right.
So
what does it have to do with CNN going away?
No, I'm saying I don't want them to go away. They're not going away.
Well, right. Who's suggesting they go away?
I think Trump would be happy if they went away.
Well, a lot of people would be happy if they go away. Nobody's acting in furtherance of it other than just not tuning in. And most of America's not doing that, obviously. But this is the whole kind of conflation of all kinds of issues. I have an opinion based on this mountain of evidence about the professionalism, competence, fair play of these particular individuals at this particular network, MSNBC, CNN. You could make the case of alternatively against at least some on Fox. So what is having an opinion, even if you're a politician, even if you're president of the United States, how does that become synonymous with is going away? It's hysterical. What is that? Nobody suggested anything of the sort other than, as I said before, their ability to keep the lights on through their ability to make a profit and pay the exorbitant salaries of the Jim Acostas and the Wolf Blitzers and the Anderson Coopers and the Jim Acosta and the rest of them. So it's like the rallying to the defense. And by the way, the interesting thing about Jim Acosta, who tweeted out just a sample of the sad scene we faced at the Trump rally in Tampa, I'm worried that the hostility whipped up by Trump and some of the conservative media will result in somebody getting hurt. We shouldn't treat our fellow Americans this way. The press is not the people's enemy. Blah, blah, blah. Namby-pamby pablum from Jim Acosta. This is reporting?
He was just describing the scene.
His description.
Journalism 101. His description of what.
Is this describing the scene? I'm very worried that the hostility whipped up by Trump and some in the conservative media will result in. Is that describing the scene? Is that being a scrivener of events on the ground?
No, he's describing his feelings, which is something you shouldn't do. But then CNN, that's where they mess up because they have reporters who then sometimes act like consultants and analysts, and there's a gray area that they cross. Either you're a reporter, you just report the fact and you get both sides of the story, or sometimes a third side of a story, or you're a commentator.
I don't care what you do. I just want everybody to call it what it is. Stop pretending the 2 + 2 is not 4. Stop pretending that this is reporting as opposed to advocacy for a particular point of view and a particular party and antagonism towards a particular person and a particular party. I don't care what you do. Report however you want to report. Talk about your feelings. Indulge your feelings all you want. 24/7 on CNN if you want. But don't pretend it's something it's not. And Acosta, you know, selects the harsh treatment he received so that, you know, people in the Twitterverse can rally to his defense. Oh, poor Jim Acosta and all that he had to face reporting from Tampa.
CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks!
Yeah, and he, you know, there's more he posts of people coming up to him and say, you lie, you know, not coming up to him because he's on a dais and they're behind a fencing, basically. So how much he was so threatened. And, you know, one woman gives him the finger. Oh, heavens. Oh, my gosh. Oh.
I hope it was the index finger.
Yeah. You're number one. and then you have celebrities and others. Trump plus white trash making America effing lame. Is this the civility we're generating? I fear for the safety of journalists, for the American people being manipulated by Trump. Yeah. The scene looks like a modern-day Ku Klux Klan rally.
Well, it was the Blacks for Trump's group that was behind Jim Acosta.
Yeah, not just...
Oh, not in that.
Not only. He was there for a long time. Yeah. I mean, so the deplorables, as they are, right?
Well, they are shouting CNN sucks. That's not a lot of civility on the Republican side.
So?
So then we can't rip on the Democrats when they do it and they lower their level of civility. I mean, we're both doing it. That's the ugliness of politics lately.
Yeah, I know. So
it is fun to watch sometimes, but it's kind of getting old.
The issue is false civility. the veneer of civility that the left calls for and doesn't practice. People want to yell CNN sucks at a rally? I don't care. People want to yell Trump sucks at a rally? I don't care. Civility as like the highest order. Eh, it's a street fight. Mike in Bolingbrook, if you have something to say, you can say
Dan,
it out loud.
First of all, you are spot on today. You're on your game. Everything you've been saying is awesome. The comparison with this CNN little flower with that woman from Fox, McLaughlin or something, Martha McCallum. You know, she was physically touched. I mean, I saw the video of that. I mean, where was the left when they were talking, you know, when this was happening? I don't know if you recall that. And then that other, you know, POS that is on another station that said something about if you put all of them together, you'll have a full set of teeth.
Yeah.
About the other night, you hear about that. I mean, that it's just getting over the top, and it's, you know, the left is whining about things that they pay no attention to when it doesn't happen to them. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Andrea Mitchell, the grand dame of the D.C. press corps.
She's the matriarch, yeah. 40 years and strong.
Trump is Stalin. Is that civil?
That's silly talk.
Is comparison, yeah, well, it is, but is comparisons to Hitler and Stalin and calling people Nazis, if you say it in a room temperature tone of voice like Dick Durbin does that make it civil because it's not... Not you're not yelling.
Shouted at, no.
You're not chanting. Wayne in Bourbonnais.
Yes. I just want to say that I am sick and tired of these Democrats running our country down. They want to talk about Nazis. Maybe Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin should look in the mirror, along with Michael Madigan and the rest of these idiots we got running our state. I wish the people of Illinois would wake up and see the damage that these people have done and continue to do and going to continue to do until they vote them out of office. And I wish they would wake up and do that in November, please. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wayne. No, they're not Nazis. Let's not do that. You know, Dick Durbin, Mike Madigan, not Nazis. It's like, don't do the Hitler comparisons. Don't do the Stalin comparisons. Hitler has no comparison, except maybe Stalin. But not to these modern-day run-of-the-mill political hacks that are mostly interested in personal aggrandizement and net worth enhancement during their time in office. Here's another example. Welcome Sarah Young to the New York Times editorial board, or Sarah Jong.
Okay. Name assassinator.
Yeah. Here's some of Sarah Jong's, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. Here's some of her tweets. White men are bull jive, except she doesn't say bull jive. No one cares about women. You can threaten anyone on the internet except cops. Huh? I dare you to get on Wikipedia and play, quote, things white people can definitely take credit for. It's really hard. New York Times editorial board member.
Ouch.
Oh, man, it's just kind of sick how much joy I get out of being cruel to old white men. Are white people genetically predisposed to burn faster in the sun, thus logically being only fit to live underground like groveling goblins? Hashtag cancel white people.
That's no lady.
I just realized why I can't stand watching Breaking Bad or Battlestar Galactica. No, this is a bridge too far. The premise of both is just white people being miserable. I mean, you can attack white people. Attacking Breaking Bad and Battlestar Galactica is just, that's just mean. Dumas effing white people marking up the internet with their opinions like dogs urinating on fire hydrants. New York Times editorial board member. Civility. Elevating the level of discourse. Uh-huh. Okay. Grant in Rockford.
Good morning, you too. Jim Acosta loves this attention he gets from Trump. Without this attention, Jim Acosta would be the no name he deserves to be. And as far as civility goes, ask Steve Scalise how well that works. You know, I don't think anybody from the left has been harmed, whereas you go on Breitbart, there's 100 different examples of violence against the right. So have a good day, guys.
Thanks for the call, Grant. Randy in Elkhorn.
Yeah, since when does every news story have the media as part of the story? You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever there's a story, the media is part of that story as opposed to just the story itself.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Randy. I mean, there's no question. It's they're in love with themselves. They love to obsess about themselves and talk about themselves.
No, there's no question that Trump has has elevated Jim Acosta's career. Nobody, I mean, some people in Chicago knew who he was, maybe because of BBM
and CNN as a network.
Yeah.
You know, do you think Zucker wants Trump to go away?
Oh, heck no.
Best thing that ever happened to him.
Ratings gold.
Speaking of civility from the left, actual violence. Massachusetts woman is accused of intentionally driving into a man's car Monday after being enraged by his Trump bumper sticker.
Another version of why Dan Proft is single.
Yeah.
Is she single looking to mingle?
She's facing charges of vandalizing property, leaving the scene of a hit and run.
Well, what does she look like? Let me see her mugshot.
Don't have the mugshot handy.
I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
Massachusetts mama.
She said, you voted for Trump. I said, yes. And then she called me a racist and a bunch of cuss words after she hit me with her car. Okay. But, you know, dare anyone accuse the left of being unhinged or uncivil. Elevating the level of discourse.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Chicago police are readying for the protest up Lakeshore Drive this afternoon. The key is the Chicago police officers taking the time to understand the gender identity of every protester so they can address them properly as they march from Lakeshore Drive to Wrigley Field.
It's so ridiculous. So the protesters are going to gather in this parking lot near Belmont and Lakeshore Drive, then walk onto Lakeshore Drive and take that up. By Fullerton, they're going to get on, take it up to Belmont, then walk west
they should
to Clark
go over,
and then make a right and end up in front of Wrigley Field.
They should have lunch at Oven Grinder. No, it's best
they
pizza in the city.
Start with lunch. And they're doing this to draw awareness about gun violence and homicides in Chicago. It's an anti-violence protest. First anti-violence protest, in case you didn't hear. They shut down the Dan Ryan. That cost taxpayers $323,000. And it's still climbing. That's how much the bill will be for taxpayers. So here they go doing this again. This is your friend, Reverend Luke Gregory Livingston, who was on our show last week. And the question is, should they be getting arrested? Because I want them arrested. Chicago police, they're in charge of Lakeshore Drive, not Illinois State Police, nobody else. So they have the authority to arrest people who walk onto Lakeshore Drive. 312-642-5600 is our Turnkey DepPro answer line. 64636, Turnkey DepPro text line. This is happening at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, we have Lollapalooza starting. We have a Cubs,
of course,
Pirates game or St. Padres game this evening at Wrigley Field.
Yeah,
and Al's Beef on.
Oh no!
Well, no, they Al's Beef. You've been Al's Beef, right?
I have. Yeah,
Al's Beef on Clark. They're hiring extra security guard.
I don't want my windows being broken, so I do have security. Just, you know, I plan for the worst, but hope for the best.
I assume he means the windows broken by police.
No.
Otherwise, that would be racist.
No, by protesters. Well, you know what I love? Mark Thomas, he owns the alley on Clark Street there, which is right next to my veterinarian. He doesn't understand, nor do I. I agree with why they are doing this.
I guess you get your TV time, but I don't know if you're going to change the world and get the crime to stop. And I think that's the real deal.
No, Greg Livingston, when we spoke with him, concedes he's not going to stop the violence any more than Flager's Dan Ryan shutdown did. This is to take the issue to a neighborhood that Rahm Emanuel actually cares about and be disruptive in their lives to, I don't know, try and get attention to the plight on the south and west sides of the city.
I'm going to have to disagree. I don't think Rahm Emanuel cares about our neighborhood. Rahm Emanuel cares about his block.
Right.
Rahm Emanuel cares about his house because we have lead in our water, don't you know? And we're getting new pipes in. And the first water pipe that's being installed is going right up Ravenswood, right to, oh my goodness, it's Mayor Emanuel's house. And here's Reverend Livingston yesterday trying to say, we're going to flip the script. Ooh.
People are complaining about us coming there. But we can flip the script if the residents of Lakeview and Wrigleyville want to come march in Inglewood and Lawndale and Austin. Believe me, we'd love to have them.
Yeah. And that's going to make it all better. Let's take all those Blaine Blue Jays and harness that energy together and let's go to the south side and the west side and march.
Could be a unifying event. No, I mean, go up to the north side today and march with them.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
Why not?
Because I'm not going to inconvenience people. Hardworking Chicagoans who want to go home after work, who want to go relax and possibly enjoy a Cubs game.
Oh, yeah.
Who want to take their dog to the vet. I'm just saying that because Bunky has a...
You have a vet appointment today.
At 4:30 on Clark and Belmont.
So that's what this
Bloom
is really
Animal.
About.
No, but they've sent out an email blast saying we're probably not going to have parking because we're going to give our parking to authority, to police cars if they need it. And, you know, allow yourself extra time to get there. And good luck getting there.
Unless you just walk.
I'm going to have to walk. Yeah. But my bulldog's sick, and I can't make her walk a mile. Let's Maybe just, I could get a little red wagon.
Unless you just put her down.
Hey!
She's going to lose the contest to Hayek anyway. Rather than have to suffer that indignity.
Put her down. Oh, yeah.
You could cancel the vet appointment. It wouldn't be inconvenienced. Here's the thing. Eddie Johnson, Tiny Dancer, I assume, will be marching with these protesters, as they endorsed and marched with Father Flager, right?
No, I don't know what's going to happen. They have not said what they're going to do. All I know is that my friends who are police officers, one was called off of furlough, and now he's getting extra hours, too, by working Lollapalooza. And they're going to have a lot of bike and foot patrol officers there. But just bring a big wagon, and when they get onto Lakeshore Drive, arrest them, please. I beg you, please, 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 for their own safety, because I think they will be run over. Well, and if it's really bad, they're going to direct traffic off of Fullerton to head west, and then they can't head up Clark. It's just going to be a disaster. Well, so they're going to have to go around a 1 mile area on Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah, it's a real logistical nightmare.
No, it is.
Well,
and it's bull jive for what? 35 people, maybe more?
I don't know how many are expected.
Insane.
The
invites are still out.
It seems like the problem is we've already conceded the principle here, right? With the Dan Ryan shutdown. So what are you going to do?
Right.
How do you pick and choose?
That's right. Remember, you said that too. Well, you do the Dan Ryan. What's next? I thought O'Hare Airport. They're going to try and shut down one of
runway.
The runways there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 14 right, 32 left is the one I would select.
See? Now you're giving them ideas.
Exactly. And we can go right after the game. They could just go up to Kennedy.
Protesters did this in 2014. I don't remember what they were protesting, but they arrested. Because I remember we were stuck on Lakeshore Drive just waiting for them to move. And then when they gave us all clear, we could continue. But it was a long haul. And they arrested four people that night.
Oh, my gosh.
It was the Black Lives Matter march. That's
these Clockwork Orange kids are always running around Lakeshore Drive.
These little... Justice Warriors, watch out for the used minivan, because I'm coming for you.
Ken in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, of course they should be arrested. Oh, by the way, nice skin, Amy. Good intellect, Dan. And if they're not arrested,
thank you very much.
They should let the people in the cars take the law in their own hands. I mean, if you're not going to enforce the law in one hand, let the people get out and beat the crap out of them for a change.
Oh,
they don't belong on the road.
I love this. I mean, you're spectacular this morning.
Thanks
you're really
for
on
the
it.
Call, Ken. Yeah, right. So more,
I mean, I'm
more
not
arrests.
And I'm not homicidal. I don't have homicidal tendencies, but this gets me so
it's good to know.
Mad that I would be tempted to, like, oh, officer, I'm so sorry. My foot slipped. I thought I was hitting the brake.
You weren't as mad about the Dan Ryan shutdown.
No, because I was out of town that weekend.
Right.
But this week, this is in my hood now.
Got it.
No, I was upset about the Dan Ryan. And then also, too, you have Illinois Masonic Hospital. Again, a level one trauma center right there, right off of Belmont. It's so stupid that we have to change our lives and these hardworking business owners on Clark Street, on Belmont, on Addison have to suffer.
Yeah.
What do you mean? It's right before Cubs game. This is their bread and butter. This is like they get the pregame stuff and the pregame crowd and the tourists from all over the world. This is when they make their money.
Tom, you should get Tom Tunney to get up these protesters' butts every day.
Oh, also too. Yeah, but there is no parking. They put up no parking signs all along to accommodate the protesters. So everybody had to move their cars.
Oh, the horrors.
On the side streets.
Bob in Villa Park.
Yeah, you know, out of all the 20,000 shootings and 5,000 murders under Tiny Dancer, how many have actually been solved that would be a deterrent to committing these things? Why don't all these protesters that take all the resources and all their time to help the police solve these murders and actually make a difference?
All right. Thanks for the call about Cold Case Squad is what we want.
Listen to this. I'm sorry. So at 4 o'clock, they're entering Lakeshore Drive in the southbound lanes. And then heading north in the southbound lanes and then exiting at Belmont.
Yeah, you gotta walk into traffic.
Oh, you gotta really
traffic.
Make it off. Yeah.
Gotta walk into traffic.
You gotta face it. Like, come on.
Yeah. It's gonna be like a scene from Mission Impossible. They're gonna be weaving in and out of traffic. Actually, Bob in Villa Park, though, makes a good point. Not so much, you know, turning these, laymen into cold case investigators, but in terms of presenting. Advocating for, gathering intel, providing it to the police, witnesses to shootings who don't want to come forward because, of course, snitches get stitches. But helping police clear some of these cases because the clearance rate we know is woefully low. The murder clearance rate, it's about 20% generally. Some years it's been recently it's been less than that. So that's a good point, and so that would be a challenge to some of the folks who live in the neighborhoods that are particularly beset by violence, you know, provide intel and information to the police to help them bring people to justice. John in Huntley.
Yeah, here's my idea. We're missing an opportunity. Let's get Hank Johnson up Atlanta,
yeah.
The congressman. Have him come up, go to Father Flager's place, do a little talk, and they all march over to Northerly Island and see if they can tip that island over like they were worried about Guam being tipped.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thanks for the call, John.
That might be their next plan.
Yeah. That's a pretty good. I still like the best idea in terms of a protest location.
What? In the sky? Well, no, wait. What did you suggest earlier?
Well, Ravinia.
Oh.
Would be great.
Oh, no. And soccer fields in Winnetka. And we'll meet.
Yeah, or like a polo match or whatever they do at New Trier.
It's lacrosse or...
But could you imagine, like, during, like, a Joe Cocker concert up at Ravinia, these people running through? Yeah. I love it. That's what Greg Livingston should do.
Lift us up where we belong. Yeah, that would be good if they...
Was that Kim Carnes doing Joe Cocker? Joanne at Midway.
Hi, just got a question for you. When they had the Dan Ryan shutdown... Every TV station had it live coverage.
Oh, yeah.
Does that mean at 4 o'clock I have to turn off my TV?
No, oh, yeah. you can still watch Judge Joe Brown.
Oh, well, on the U. But no, ABC, CBS, NBC, they're all taking it live at 4 o'clock. But it's perfect because that's normally when they start their news programs. I wonder why he planned it for 4.
Yeah, because he's a sharp guy. I like it. Media savvy.
Yeah,
I like
give them that.
Protest organizers to be media savvy. Robert in Oak Park.
Yeah, real quick. 10 years ago, I riding my bike in the city, accidentally got on to Lakeshore Drive. I got arrested and thrown in Cook County for 3 days.
Wow.
With a $250,000 bond put on me.
Mm-hmm. What? Did you have anything on your person?
I was completely straight, and I don't do drugs. So it's
in the prison purse.
Were you dragging a dog?
Again, just remember, our laws do not apply to everybody. Certain people,
amen, brother.
Certain ways, other people, other ways.
Now, Robert,
that's the way our system works.
Do you live in the city?
No, I live in Oak Brook.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me tell you something. We don't need more bike riders in the city, all right? My neighborhood is infested with these people.
Well, if they finish that.
Me too. Hey, that's the one thing about bike riders. They don't obey by the law.
They're like gremlins.
Whatever the hell they want to
do. Here we go.
They're road warriors.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere. In your neighborhood, they are. I was at Navy Pier yesterday on the Sea Dog. Woof, woof. And bikers were, it is a bit of a problem. But once you get that bridge finished that they've been working on for 10 years or 12 years now, once that's finished, it's going to be a whole new world.
No, the bypass is great.
The bypass, yeah. They just need to finish it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Back to Lakeshore Drive. Yeah, if you even walk on Lakeshore Drive, you can call. I would always call 911 on people who are walking on Lakeshore Drive.
Because you have nothing better to do.
No, because I didn't want them to get killed or I didn't want to kill them myself. So I'd call and they pick you up. It's a heavy fine. As our last caller just pointed out, it's a big deal. You cannot walk on Lakeshore Drive.
Right.
You can't run. You can't do anything on Lakeshore Drive. Don't even look at it. Okay?
You can. What about biking the drive?
On that day, that day you.
You make
shut
a special dispensation. You offer a special dispensation of bike riders. This is what it begets.
No. You
broke the seal with bike riders.
You broke
the seal. Once they get to ride on Lakeshore Drive, then it's, it's a free-for-all.
It's over.
It's cats and dogs living together.
And Reverend Gregory Livingston, I know his heart's in the right place. I've got that. But not now. Not on Lakeshore Drive. On a busy Thursday in the summertime. You think our police resources, we're not stretched to the gills right now? We've got Lollapalooza and now this?
What about arresting anybody who attends Lollapalooza just on principle? I'd be for that. Randy in Elkhorn.
Hey, Joe Cocker, is he still dead?
Not to me, he's not.
Wait, is he dead? Did he die?
Thanks for the call, Randy.
Joe Cocker
is immortal, Randy.
Well,
fine.
Well, ABBA cover bands always play at Ravinia.
ABBA cover bands? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That could be
good. That draws a crowd.
No,
seriously, we have to plan their next shutdown.
Yeah,
they got to take it to Green Bay Row or somewhere up.
Doesn't like Steely Dan come every August or something?
Joe Cocker is dead. What did he do?
Yeah, I know he is. But not to me, he's not.
Okay.
Chad on the south side.
Hi, Dan and Amy. This is Chad.
Yeah.
Hey, I think that those protesters were to get together and chant that they were going to vote Republican, they would get more attention from Ron Emanuel.
Thanks for the call, Chad. Yeah, they would.
So I can't wait to see how Mayor Emanuel is going to react to this and Superintendent Eddie Johnson.
Would you be more sympathetic to the protesters walking against traffic on South Lakeshore Drive to Wrigley Field if they were chanting CNN sucks? Would that help?
Too soon, Dan.
Mike in Crown Point.
Morning, Dan and Amy. This is the left with their symbolism over substance. If they really wanted to and were concerned about the violence, go protest in the violent neighborhoods. Everybody can tell you exactly where the drug guys are located. March right in their offices, their buildings, and tell them, get the hell out.
Yeah, okay.
But they don't want to do that because they just want to make themselves feel good.
Well, they also don't want to do that, Mike, because they don't want to get shot. I think that probably has a lot to do with it.
This is all a publicity stunt.
Well, yeah.
Obviously. Well, and I know he wants to draw national attention to his cause. I understand that, but this is not the right way to do it. Didn't stop it. It didn't change anything after the Dan Ryan was shut down.
Remember,
how many shootings were that weekend? Seven people were killed.
It's not going to change anything. March isn't going to change anything. And a candlelight vigil, novelty T-shirts. None of that's going to change
anything.
What
about the Mylar balloon, huh?
If you get enough of them. The interesting thing, though, remember this. Greg Livingston and his crew, they're anti-Tiny Dancer. They've called for his resignation, Freddie Johnson's resignation. Flager is a Tiny Dancer flack. So there's a difference there. Marty in Naperville.
Hey, guys, good show. Amy's absolutely right. Has anything at all changed since Father Failure had his last little scam on Lakeshore Drive?
Yeah, violence has increased.
And it never will.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Well,
Marty.
The only thing that changes, the taxpayers were billed $323,000 for that. for 2 hours of work. That's, I know it's nothing when you look at the big, you know, picture, but still, it's wasted funds. It's wasted tax dollars. I don't get it.
Maybe send send an invoice to St. Sabina.
Oh, that's a great idea.
You could. I mean, absolutely within their rights to do so.
Yeah, but do they have the, you know what I mean, onions down there to do it?
Obviously not.
Why are you busting my onions?
They don't have onions at all. Tom in Deer Park.
So $300,000+
yes,
of public money used to back the stunt of Father Flager and Mayor Tiny Dancer, which was for gun control.
Yeah.
Somebody
right.
paid for the buses, for the T-shirts, the logistics, all the media stuff. That was an anonymous donor. I don't know if it was Michael Blomberg or the Archdiocese or St. Sabina. But basically, what's happening here is that there's a public, a private agenda of the Archdiocese, of Father Flager, of Tiny Dancer. But the public is paying for their speech because of the police protection. So the anonymous donor doesn't pay the police protection. We do, and they're trying to take our rights at the same time. That's unbelievable.
It's a nice twofer, isn't it, Tom? Yes. Good point.
And
thanks for
the catering call. To them, too, by even they put up those signs yesterday. I saw it where they're giving them a pathway to have their march. All that section of Belmont, the signs are up. You'll be towed by 3:30. And then on Clark, all the way up to Addison.
We like spectacles in this town. You got your protest marches. You got your Nick Walenda on a wire from Marina Tower to the Leo Burnett Building.
That was kind of cool.
You got your slut walk.
Oh, the slut walk was great this year. We missed you.
I mean,
gosh, you got to come back next year.
I mean, you need a good spectacle every few weeks in the summer just to keep things interesting in the city.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and if you've seen J.B. Pritzker's, a.k.a. Spalding, his most recent television spot, you see him French kissing a dog.
Well, yeah.
And, yeah.
And this was playing in the background.
He's got a glandular problem.
I was afraid he was going to eat the dog, but he was just kissing the dog because he loves puppies.
So Spalding, he's our future governor, don't you know?
And it's your grandson, huh? Oh, wonderful boy. Nice boy, right? He's a good boy, I'll tell you. Now I know why tigers eat their young, you know?
So just thinking about that relationship with the dog, I want to...
You want me to play the ad?
I want to make people aware of this story, particularly at the Pritzker camp and the Pritzker family. Dog's lick causes blood infection. Man has limbs amputated.
What?
No, the man had his limbs amputated. Or is that the song the guy was making? So, Greg Mantifel contracted a blood disease.
Because he let his dog lick his face?
Bacteria in dog saliva, in his dog saliva, was found that induces sepsis. The blood infection spread quickly and resulted in the amputations of both feet. Man's best friend, indeed.
Well, doesn't every dog owner let their dog lick their face?
Doug.
312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro, Interline 64636-DA, then a quick comment. I have a friend who, she literally makes out with her dog.
Oh, really?
It's disgusting.
You might want to tell your friend that doctors are going to eventually be forced to remove parts of this gentleman's lower legs and nose.
Oh, I got a hottie in Houston that'll bite that off for him. She'll take it off for free and swallow it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. The girl fight down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last week in Houston. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you may want to, if you're JB, you're Spalding, you may want to get the dog checked. And I would also suggest whoever owns that dog get that I mean, JB needs to get checked. I would also have the dog checked because who knows what bacteria is in JB Pritzker's saliva as well. Uh-huh. I mean, it goes both ways is my point.
Well, don't you let Hayek lick you? You give Hayek kisses, right? See, this just sounds really bad and inappropriate.
Sure. Saturday night, me, Hayek.
It's a peanut butter.
Jar of peanut butter.
That's not a Kong.
Okay. You had to turn an important medical issue into something tawdry and obscene.
I had no idea that that could happen.
It's outrageous. Speaking of tawdry and obscene,
that didn't take long.
Fungible state rep we talked about yesterday's story broke during the show. Nick Sauer, one of these kind of windblown Republican establishment mimbos from Lake Barrington, he resigned yesterday.
That didn't take long.
No. After a report came out to where an ex-girlfriend accused him of catfishing her using risque photos of her to set up a fake Instagram account where he was communicating with other dudes about his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend and talking apparently graphically about...
Oh, he had conversations...
His girlfriend.
According to the report, and his ex-girlfriend, Kate Kelly... he had conversations with 8 men that were going on for a few years. So I don't know if he was trying to hurt her with revenge porn, because that's how she classified it. I think he was just trolling for dudes.
Could be.
No. That's conjecture on my part.
That is.
Regardless,
but
though,
it stands to reason.
He said, after speaking with my family, I felt it best to step away from my public responsibilities.
Yeah.
Jim Durkin, Illinois House Republican leader, said that this is troubling and we should allow the proper authorities to conduct their investigation. He's the one who actually came forward with the release stating that he will be resigning effective immediately. So his resignation was tendered at 5 p.m. yesterday.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Chicago police investigation. Because his ex-girlfriend filed a complaint. And revenge porn is illegal, so he does face potentially criminal charges as well with
false
this.
Impersonation.
And I understand he has already started dating Manti Te'o's former girlfriend.
Stop it! Here's Governor Bruce Rauner, who twisted this. This is fantastic.
What's clear is Madigan has hidden accusations. He has pushed back against those who would come forward, and his lieutenants have threatened individuals. He's created a culture of harassment and hiding the harassment.
That was his response to what Nick Sauer.
That was his response to Nick Sauer tendering his resignation. Allegations.
Governor Rauner, nice weather today, isn't it? What I know about the weather is that Mike Madigan is responsible for
the cold front near the lake.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, could you be more clunky?
He's uncomfortable in his own skin. That's all I can tell you.
Could you have anything to say other than Madigan? Oh, by the way, Governor, if we're being honest, which I know is not your strong suit. We know, fact, the Legislative Inspector General's office, with respect to claims against legislators, sexual harassment, and, the full gamut, there was no appointment made for more than 2.5 years. 2.5 years that office sat idle. That's Republicans and Democrats. The Legislative Ethics Commission responsible for the appointment, yes, it is majority Democrats, since there's a majority in the House. Republicans are on that committee, too. They also did nothing. Said nothing. You did nothing. You said nothing until Denise Rothheimer and others finally came forward and exposed the fact that this office was vacant, which was a nice sort of non-aggression pact between the two parties in Springfield. And as we've seen here, yes, you've got thugs and sexual deviants within Madigan's inner circle who've been exposed, and that's a good thing. But they're not the only ones, are they?
Also, 35-year-old Nick Sauer, just in case you didn't know, he was a member of the House Sexual Harassment and Discrimination Task Force.
Mm. Yeah. So, again...
And he was on that task force while he was continuing to pretend to be somebody he wasn't and speak with 8 dudes.
Yeah.
Via...
Yeah.
Instagram.
What would you
get old Instagram?
Yeah, tell me what you like to. Here's my picture of my girlfriend. What would you like to do with her?
Or with me? And then he pretended that he was her. So it was a little.
Well, right. That's
yeah. Okay.
That's my
okay,
point.
I...
Yeah.
It's gross. He and Kate Kelly met on Tinder. That always ends well.
Or Grindr?
A few years ago.
Tinder or Grindr?
No, it was. Which one's the? No, the Tinder.
Yeah.
And she moved here from California to Chicago to be with him, and she wanted to be reimbursed for travel fees.
Which he was, as he was trying to clean up his mess.
Can I have a dating tip for the ladies? If you are wanting to have a long-distance relationship, if they really want to see you, they will buy your ticket. Don't buy your own ticket. Have the man buy the ticket. Then you know that he really wants to see you. Don't buy your own ticket and then charge him later for it. Bad form. I'm just saying. Well,
okay.
We can always grow and learn in relationships.
No.
And
yeah.
I just want Kate Kelly to know that next time this happens, have them buy the ticket, because if they want to see you, though. They broke up eventually because he had another girlfriend that she didn't know about.
Yeah, another girlfriend, huh?
Girlfriend. Manteo. What is his name?
Manti-Teo.
Manti-Teo.
So again, the tip is?
The tip is if they want to see you, they will buy your transportation, whether it be a train or a plane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Or an Uber.
Or whatever. But don't pay for your own way to get there.
Thank you for that. That's like a...
Why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free?
The more you know.
Yeah.
Kind of moment.
The relationship advice segment.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Quickly, we did the story earlier in the week about Kane County, property tax in Kane County.
In the 7:30 hour, I think it was yesterday or Monday. No, it was
Tuesday, maybe. 3.5% of home value routinely, just equity being decimated in Kane County. Three times the national average. We gave examples of people who've just completely taken a bath. And, of course, we're talking about middle-income families getting hammered, their home value being destroyed by confiscatory property taxes. Maybe this has something to do with it. Retired Kane County Water District employee has banked $3.5 million in pension payments since he retired 20 years ago at the age of 58. Albin Pogorski has received $3.5 million.
What?
From the Fox River Water Reclamation District, which serves 180,000 residents in Elgin, South Elgin, West Dundee.
We are in the wrong job.
Pogorski's current annual pension benefit is $211,000, despite having only contributed $93,000 to his retirement during his 40 years of work. Contributed 93, $3.5 million and counting, $211,000 a year.
The math just doesn't add up. That is ridiculous.
It is not just about pension payments being skipped, politicians short funding pensions. It is about benefit levels in this state that are not financeable. And this is why pension, job, or home, which is it going to be? Your home is being taken from you because of these stories, because of the examples like this. This is what's actually happening on the ground. Raw numbers. Real stories.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump called on Jeff Sessions and got no answer, perhaps the wrong number or the wrong request. And the request was, it's a terrible situation. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions should stop this rigged witch hunt right now before it continues to stay in our country any further. Bob Mueller is totally conflicted, and his 17 angry Democrats that are doing his dirty work are a disgrace to USA! Exclamation point. Trump tweet on topic. Good idea for Jeff Sessions to remove Bob Mueller. Politically, substantively, makes sense to you? Good idea for Trump to tweet as such? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Now, Trump did get the right number when he called in to Rush Limbaugh's show yesterday. Rush Limbaugh celebrating his 30th anniversary of his show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people like us need to genuflect before Rush and all that he's done for talk radio in 3 decades.
Yep.
But Trump took the occasion to restate his position with respect to funding for border security in the forthcoming budget before the forthcoming, or perhaps after the forthcoming, midterm election. He hedged a little bit, did Trump. And it's interesting. So you've got, and I understand you can walk and chew gum at the same time, but you've got Trump making a lot of Republicans uncomfortable with his tweets about Mueller, particularly yesterday's, and making a lot of Republicans uncomfortable with respect to his saber-rattling about shutting down the government over border wall funding.
The other thing is the wall. We've started it. It's like pulling teeth, getting these guys to get it done. And you have no idea how tough I've been. And I say, hey, if you have a shutdown, you have a shutdown. Now, the shutdown can also take place after the election. I happen to think it's a great political thing because people want border security.
Yeah, so it's interesting, the little bit of hedge there. Republicans have been supportive of him. He wants to work with them. Some of it said do it after the midterm. He thinks it's a good idea to do it before the midterm to, you know, force this decision and potentially the government shutdown, such as that term even is accurate. It's really a misnomer, temporary delay and a small fraction of the government.
Because when it's all over, everyone gets paid anyway.
Yeah.
They get back pay.
And a small percentage are furloughed.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's the theatrics, it's the media hysteria surrounding it, and Republicans on the Hill nervous about that before the midterms, and Trump seems open to waiting till after the midterms. But you need turnout before the midterms, not after. And so if it's seen like you're watering down, weakening, potentially punting again on border security and the wall, so central to his campaign, a key promise that he made, you know, I don't really understand what Trump's thinking is with respect to the Mueller stuff combined with his hedge on border wall and border security funding with ostensibly the desire to hold the House.
And he still wants to have a face-to-face sit-down with Robert Mueller, lawyer Rudy Giuliani.
He's always been interested in testifying. It's us, meaning the team of lawyers, including me, that have the most reservations about that.
And Mueller offered, you know, yesterday, saying, because they're going back and forth, he's offered to reduce the number of obstruction-related questions if he's addressed in person and not just in written answers. And I think that's fraught with danger, and that's just a perjury trap. So if I was President Trump, I know he wants to clear his name. I know he wants this Mueller investigation to go away, but I would never sit down with a face-to-face Mueller.
And I know there's some disappointment with Jeff Sessions and his performance as Attorney General so far among Trump supporters, but you really think that this makes sense for Jeff Sessions to fire Bob Mueller politically?
I think it'd be awful.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Related note on the midterm, since this is sort of all funneling into that, Barack Obama released his endorsements.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And guess who is not on the list? Did you notice?
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't need to be. It's a Democrat district.
I know, but still, I think that sounds a message that we're still a Democratic Party and not a Socialist Party. I don't know. What do you think?
No,
why wouldn't he just throw her name in there?
I don't think it, because it's not a competitive race.
Right?
Look at the races he endorsed in Illinois. Not that these will end up being competitive, but some of them are. But for Congress, he endorsed Sean Casten against Roscom, yeah. Brendan Kelly against Bost, and Lauren Underwood against Hultgren. Those are all swing races this year, they're looking to be. So he's endorsing swing races where it matters. That's where OFA is going to play. They're not going to play in 80% Dem districts. So I think the PO was, he didn't endorse it. That's a walk back. It's showing the Democrat moderates or centrists are reasserting themselves. First of all, Obama's not a centrist. He's the front man for the radical left, and he has been his entire political career.
Yeah, that's how I thought she'd have her at the top of the list.
So but
you're right. That congressional race, there is no race.
There's no race. So, yeah, I mean, it would be irrelevant that he's only endorsing a handful of candidates in, states around the country. Mike in Big Rock, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Big Rock.
Yeah, hi, Dan and Amy. You know, one thing we forget is that the work environment around President Trump concerning this investigation is it's toxic. People that worked for him during the campaign have had to spend millions to defend themselves. And, you know, he's probably sticking up for those people as well because he's seen their lives ruined.
Well, he should say that. I mean, he should say that explicitly. But even still, politically, I mean, even though that's a fair point you're making, perhaps some people have been unfairly harmed politically. Do you understand the daisy chain this would set off were Jeff Sessions to violate his recusal and fire Bob Mueller? There'd be a lot more heads being chopped off at justice or people walking before that happened. And then this dominates the discussion going into the midterms. Do you think this is do you want this to be the referendum question in the minds of voters, whether the Mueller firing was appropriate or not? Do you want the election to be a referendum on Trump impeachment, as Rudy Giuliani suggests it will be? Or do you want it to be a referendum on some of the accomplishments of the Trump administration, particularly the economy's performance in the last 18 months? John in Palatine.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Personally, I would like to see the government shut down indefinitely. And at least in my case, if I shut my job down, I wouldn't get paid. So no one should get paid during the shutdown. And I think that's how Trump should spin it.
Okay. Thanks for the call, John. Jim in Tampa.
Good morning, guys.
Were you at the rally?
I think it's a bad tweet. No, I wasn't there.
Oh.
But I heard a lot of people talking about it. People loved it down here. I think it's a bad tweet, that particular one, for the reasons you just said, Dan. I mean, it would really change the whole narrative of what everybody's talking about. But the other side is, when you were talking about Trump hedging, I actually didn't see it as a hedge. I think Trump has this way where he goes into kind of like an analyst mode. Where he's talking and then suddenly he's analyzing both sides of an issue out loud, talking out loud. They think it's this, but I actually think it's that. And it's almost like he sees himself as a sports analyst, you know, at halftime, talking about what happened in the first half and what we should do in the second half. I don't know.
That's part of it. But he left the door open to the idea of pushing it past the midterms. And I think that's a mistake. And I think you should say it's a mistake so that people understand on the Hill that he is going to the mat on this. And
probably his lack of experience as a politician coming out there.
Thanks.
Because you're right.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy talking about Trump's tweet and, of course, the howls from Democrats of prima facie evidence of obstruction, although they didn't use prima facie because they don't know what that means.
That's a scrub I used on my face last night.
Yeah.
And it's exfoliating.
That's why you have such great skin.
Exactly.
It's not me saying it, it's Lake County Sheriff saying that. And so here's the thing. Just even if you're a subject of an investigation, you don't lose your First Amendment right. So the assertion that Trump's tweet is evidence of obstruction is absurd. But that's the tip of the iceberg in terms of the fury you would hear if Jeff Sessions actually did what Donald Trump suggested he should do. Nick, in an undisclosed location, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. How you doing today?
Morning.
Good.
The tweet's not that big of a deal. I mean, even Rosenstein said they found no collusion
on any part of any American. So why keep this thing going? It's just a waste of money.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's a fair point or fair position to take based on the absolute lack of evidence in support of the claims of collusion, conspiracy, obstruction to this point. However, the question is, Trump right to tweet this? Would it be smart for Jeff Sessions to violate his recusal and fire Bob Mueller?
Oh, sure. I would do it in a heartbeat. And the other problem we have is these congressmen. They should be giving him the money for the wall. Who votes these people in?
I mean, this is amazing.
This should have been a hands-down money given for the wall on the first budget.
All right. Thanks for the call, Nick. Nate in Bridgeport.
Yeah. You know what? It comes to mind. The only reason why Jeff Sessions won't weigh in is because Mueller's got something on him. That's what this has become. These guys have a history of playing 30 like that, and it's the only thing that makes sense.
Well, I don't know. There's no evidence of that either. Thanks for the call, Nate. And, you know, I think, did Sessions have to recuse himself in this matter? No, but it was a close call. He did seek counsel before making the decision.
And President Trump is still upset with that.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously. But, I mean, are his tweets official statements?
It doesn't matter.
What is
an official statement versus an unofficial statement? The President of the United States making
a
statement.
Obstruction of justice because he wants to...
Secretly,
he wants Sessions to end the investigation, to fire Mueller. I don't
Attorney
think
General
smart.
Jeff Sessions should stop the rigged witch hunt. That's what he tweeted. Yeah. That's... Again, First Amendment rights, even if you're the subject of investigation, that is not criminal. Not criminal. Okay. But now the question is it smart? Those are two different questions. And I agree with you. I don't think it's smart. Megan on the South Side.
Hi. Good morning, guys. I don't think it's smart. But my question is, what is the left prepared to do if Mueller does become fired? Are they not already at critical mass?
Yeah,
I can't imagine how far they could still go.
Well, right, but you're feeding that. You're giving them, the perception of guilt. You're giving them more ammo. You don't want to arm your enemy. I mean, I know we do that here in the Illinois Republican Party, but I don't think we should scale that model nationally. I want to finance my enemy. I want to arm my enemy. Give him more munitions. No, that's what this would do. Jeff and Berwyn.
Greetings, Dan and Amy. No, they're not going to fire anybody before the election for the exact reason that Dan has been saying, politically suicide. However, after the election, when the Republicans have maintained control of the House and they add a few senators, which they will, then it's open season because the political fallout will dissipate in a few months. Now, I'm not saying Trump do the firing. He's going to have Jeff Sessions retire or resign because he's basically incompetent. He's going to appoint a new attorney general, maybe Joe DiGenova or somebody like that, and then let him do the firing. It's all very simple.
Okay, possibly. All right, thanks for the call, Jeff.
Coming up,
it's that simple, but it's the way you made it sound was simple.
Yeah, it made it sound beautiful.
Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And so Sarah Sanders at the press briefing yesterday asked about Jim Acosta's treatment at the Trump rally in Tampa. And here's how that went.
And no broadcaster was broadcasting state secrets. They were trying to do stand-ups at a public rally, and you had people trying to yell over them, preventing them from doing their jobs, and yelling that their network sucks on live TV.
Look,
does the White House support that or not?
While we certainly support freedom of the press, we also support freedom of speech, and we think that those things go hand in hand.
So there you go, hand in hand, freedom of speech. You can say CNN sucks as much as you want, and Jim Acosta can complain about it as much as he wants. That's the circle of life and politics in a free society, at least. For more on this in advance of the midterm elections, we're pleased to be joined again by David French, writer at National Review, constitutional lawyer, bestselling author, veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. David, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So what about that? You know, I mean, the Trump rally, the idea that there was colorful chanting going on at a Trump rally, that this is something the D.C. press corps is wringing their hands over after more than 2 years of it. It becomes a little bit stale. Their complaints get, a little bit sort of self-indulgent and yawn-worthy for me. What about you?
Well, I mean, some of those videos, I don't think people should act like that. You look at people screaming profanities at them, getting in their faces and yelling at them. It's just not the way you should act. I don't think that's the kind of behavior you would want to see out of Republicans. I get the Sarah Sanders point about freedom of speech, but you don't have the right to interrupt somebody else's speech and stop them from doing their jobs. Is it the biggest deal in the world? No. But it's, to the extent that there's people getting in somebody's face or the screaming, the yelling, the profanities, all of those things, I don't think there's any argument that reflects well on the people doing it.
No, I obviously agree with you. But, it's like the lout at the ball game screaming at the pitcher and the umpire at every pitch. And I understand that this is a sporting event and we should take our politics more seriously. But it is sort of a rally atmosphere. It's people blowing off steam. The idea that this is the natural predicate to violence, that this is Stalinist, as Andrea Mitchell incredibly said earlier this week, is just a little absurd. And so on the one hand, you can say, hey, temper the middle fingers and the profanity. On the other hand, I don't want to run interference for the D.C. press corps on this stuff.
Well, of course, there's the overreaction to it, which is always inevitable when there's any kind of negative development in the Trump era. You'll always see the rhetoric go to 11 in the other direction.
Right.
I don't know that I've I remember when Bush was compared to Hitler, but I don't think I've heard as many comparisons to Hitler and fascism.
So,
in modern times, I don't know if I've ever heard so many comparisons to fascism. So, yeah, things the reactions go extreme in the other direction as well, for sure.
I thought I was asking if you think it's extreme that President Trump had tweeted yesterday that he wants he wants Jeff Sessions to end the Mueller probe, essentially firing Mueller. Do you think that is an obstruction of justice, or what are your thoughts?
Well, it's not obstruction of justice. I mean, tweets are not obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice, we have the pattern for it from based on the impeachment articles against Nixon and Clinton. And obstruction of justice would be, for example, if Trump lies to grand jury witnesses, giving them false information in the hopes that they'll deliver false information to the grand jury. That was one of the things that Bill Clinton did, that Richard Nixon did. That's what obstruction of justice is when you're actually interfering with a lawful proceeding, like a grand jury investigation. But tweets like that are not obstruction of justice. That doesn't mean that they're smart. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they're wise. He has the power to end this investigation if he wants to. I think what he's doing via Twitter is just venting. Andy McCarthy said it pretty well. Look, if the president actually thinks that an injustice is being done in this investigation, or say to Paul Manafort, who tweeted on behalf of also yesterday, well, he has the power to do something about it. But otherwise, he should stop these tweets.
Dan Henninger, writing in the Wall Street Journal, suggests that talking about Mueller, even talking about the government shutdown, potentially be willing to shut the government down over border security and border wall funding, is running interference into the message that Republicans should be carrying the next for the 90 some odd days running up to the midterm elections, which is about the positive accomplishments of this administration, specifically the economy's performance over the last 18 months. Do you think that, sort of it's the economy stupid redux is the approach that Republicans should be taking?
Well, I mean, it's an approach that has worked for a long time in politics. I remember when Clinton was under extreme pressure for the Lewinsky investigation, they did two things at the same time with an awful lot of discipline. One of them was attack the investigation, attack the investigators, and the other thing was talk about the booming economy and talk about how that's a distraction from his job as in his role as president, and it works for him. So I do think that there is, there's sound political advice. It is sound political advice to say, hey, Mr. President, you just hit 4% economic growth. You're nearing full employment. When you look at the, unemployment rate, why not talk about that at least as much as you talk about the Mueller investigation? And, he does do that, but I think, and he does talk about the economy. But I think, if you look at some of these Twitter screeds about the investigation, what he does is, he's a little bit, this might come as a shock, he's a little bit undisciplined in his communications. And he's got a story to tell for the midterms. He's got a story to tell about judges. He's got a story to tell about the economy. He's got a story to tell about ISIS and the end of the ISIS caliphate. Those are very good and important things that have been accomplished. I think he should be relentlessly hammering home to the American people that all that's happened in his administration. And, unfortunately for Republicans, he's not doing that. And so what ends up happening is I think you might see Republicans suffering in the midterms as a result of that, because people, there's a lot of people who might be happy about the economy, but who are also not happy about some of this endless drama.
Now, you wrote a wonderful article in the Washington Post about cowards weakening sensible gun rights. The Stand Your Ground law in Florida, do you think it should be changed after that shooting in the parking lot with Michael Drejka? Because he's a free man, and obviously the person who pushed him to the ground is dead.
Right. No, it shouldn't be changed. It should be applied.
Yeah.
applied lawfully. And so the Stand Your Ground law, and this is something that gets misunderstood all the time, the Stand Your Ground law on its face does not protect Michael Drejka, the man who killed another man for pushing him. On its face, the Stand Your Ground law has two provisions, and a lot of people have ignored this. And one provision says that if someone uses unlawful force against me, short of deadly force, mm-hmm. I can use unlawful force back. In other words, if someone pushes me, I can push back. If someone hits me, I can hit back. The only time I'm allowed to use deadly force under that law is if I'm reasonably in fear of imminent death or grave serious bodily harm. In other words, I have to be not just actually in fear that I'm going to die. That fear has to be reasonable. In other words, it has to be objectively reasonable. And in this circumstance, he was pushed. That's what happened. And then as soon as he pulled, this Drejka guy pulled out his gun, the person who pushed him started backing away. That is not circumstances where you're in reasonable fear of death or of great bodily harm. That is a circumstance covered by the first part of the law that says, hey, if you're pushed, you can push back, not shoot. So a punch or a kick or a push is not a license to kill. And that was what's been so totally misinterpreted by that Florida sheriff. And what ends up happening is that Michael Drejka begins to discredit lawful gun owners because the other side will use him as a symbol of this is what it's like with Stand Your Ground. You discredit Stand Your Ground laws. No, just apply the laws written, and the laws written doesn't protect that behavior.
Speaking of the application of the law, your reaction to the temporary restraining order that was issued in Seattle blocking the posting of blueprints for 3D printed guns?
Oh my goodness! I didn't think it was possible for me to be surprised by mainstream media ignorance about guns and gun rights, but I got surprised. The whole 3D gun printing hysteria that erupted over the last 48 hours was unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's as if people suddenly discovered that people can make guns at home. They had no idea that was the case, and it's been going on since before the founding of the Republic. This is judicial lawlessness, because let's be really clear about what happened. The judge blocked publication of information that's already everywhere online, that somebody could find with a few seconds of a Google search. Publication of information to create create weapons that were not illegal. That's something that people, again, were completely missing. Everything in the sky was providing information on how to create illegal guns. No, not one of the designs that were being published were for all plastic guns, which all plastics have been undetectable on a metal detector would be illegal and has been illegal to make an all-plastic undetectable gun since 1988. This is how old, the technology is to actually create undetectable guns. I mean, we're talking about the Reagan administration since his death has been banned. So as the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals said a couple of years ago, all of the designs that he was going to be putting online were lawful for weapons that people could lawfully own. The whole purpose of blocking them by the Obama administration was not to block them for Americans, it's to block them for access overseas. And all the Trump administration did was essentially say, well, we're going to lift this ban on sharing information, which is a prior restraint on speech, by the way. We're going to lift this ban on sharing information because it is not actually the national security interests don't outweigh the interest in the first to protect the spread of information under the First Amendment. So this wasn't a gun case. This was a First Amendment case. And the rhetoric around this, that somehow what was going to happen was this unprecedented access that people are going to have to undetectable firearms, is completely false.
Excellent distillation of that issue and the associated hysteria, and nothing more dangerous than when you have the media's ignorance of guns combined with the media's ignorance of the Constitution. Then you've got a real force multiplier there. So we appreciate that explanation. David French, writer at National Review, con lawyer, best-selling author, and also the veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. David, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Amy, I assume you saw the Jennifer Aniston interview in InStyle magazine.
Oh, I missed it.
But it's not just...
Are you the one who took the copy off my desk?
Yeah, I read this when I was at the hairdresser. Yeah.
Getting a mani-pedi?
Getting
then a haircut?
Getting my hair done.
Oh, by Jennifer?
Do four times a week. Jennifer Aniston on the Miss America pageant and beauty in the modern context.
I can't wait.
I love the Miss America pageant is going to get rid of the swimsuit competition altogether.
Boring.
A swimsuit body is a body in a swimsuit, no matter what that body is. So profound.
Wow, a swimsuit is in a body.
A swimsuit is a body in a swimsuit. A swimsuit body is a body in a swimsuit, no matter what that body is.
Ain't no body like your body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go on.
This is how she shot to stardom. The kind of witty banter you can catch on Friends. It's time to just stop thinking beauty is in the shape of a size 4 and the right butt size and the right waist size and the right measurements. It's just old. We've done it. We've been there. Let's move on. No, let's not.
I'm not going to watch without the swimsuit competition.
See?
Or the evening gown competition.
Boring!
By the way, exactly. Aniston also said, interestingly.
Yeah, she has great skin.
Yeah, well, she does.
She does.
Mark Curran said that about her as well.
Because of Aveeno.
She also said in Hollywood, she's been treated worse by women than men, even though she's experienced some sexism.
Huh.
Yeah, how about that?
I'll put the article back on my desk.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and this discussion about civility and elevating the discourse coming out of the latest Trump rally in Tampa earlier this week, and just the general back and forth between President Trump and the D.C. press corps that's been going on since, basically since Trump announced that he was a candidate for President of the United States. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Cheryl Atkinson, who's the host of Full Measure. Full Measure is in 43 million households on 162 Sinclair Broadcast Group stations, including ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, all of them. Sunday mornings, also live streams at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Fullmeasure.news is the website. Oh, she's also the author of the book, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Cheryl Atkinson, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start not with Jim Acosta, but how about the other side of this equation a little bit? The recently minted New York Times editorial board member, Sarah Jong, who in her Twitter account, it's been unearthed, has offered, New York Times editorial board, offered tweets like, it's kind of sick how much joy I get out of being cruel to old white men. Dumas effing white people making up, marking up the internet with their opinions like dogs pissing on fire hydrants. Oh.
Ladylike.
I just can't realize why I can't stand watching Breaking Bad or Battlestar Galactica. The premise of both is just white people being miserable. White people have stopped breeding. You'll all go extinct soon. This was my plan all along. I mean, just like bizarre, juvenile stuff. And she's on the New York Times editorial board now, the gray lady that we're supposed to have so much respect for because we're told so by the New York Times.
Well, maybe even more that so many New York Times articles now bleed news in with opinion. She's on the editorial board, so I understand your objections, but at least that's the editorial board.
Yeah.
There are news articles that regularly state things as if fact that they don't know to be fact, that they certainly didn't witness firsthand, but they're not attributing. That give opinions, the reporter's own opinion mixed in with the story, which, you know, when I went to journalism school, we were taught how to avoid that. So I think maybe even that's a more worrisome trend in a way.
What about Jim Acosta being, you know, she's kind of borderline harassed at the Trump rally and a number of places where he goes. Do you think that they crossed the line? Because when I was in journalism school, you just reported the facts on both sides of a story, possibly a third side of a story, but you never inserted your opinion. How has Jim Acosta possibly brought this upon himself?
You know, I worked at CNN in 1990 to 93, and when we as anchors were summarizing an appearance by the president or whatnot, I mean, didn't even have to be told this as a young journalist. We simply stuck to the facts. We would summarize by saying, you know, the president just spoke and briefly said X, Y, and Z. The last one I saw, Anderson Cooper, who's not a straight journalist, you know, he's more of an editorial person, he came out and immediately declared it to be one of the most, I don't know, disgusting performances ever by an American president. Just it's a whole different organization than when I was there. I've never seen Jim Acosta's show or even, I just don't watch CNN, so if a clip crosses my path, I don't know much about him. But I would say in general, we in the news, I think our skin is way too thin. We're criticizing people on a daily basis and in some cases using some very editorial remarks against the subjects of the people we report on. And yet when we get some flack for the sometimes obvious mistakes and bias that we make and that we have, we kind of act like it's the end of the world and that just we can't stand this. And I think we need to have thicker skin.
How would you assess the D.C. press corps' coverage of the Mueller investigation to this point?
I think there's been some good coverage, and I think that there's been a pretty tight lid on a lot of that investigation. There's been some leaks and some incorrect leaks about things. So from that standpoint, there's been a lot of misreporting by tangential reporters who said, for example, that You know, Manafort was going to cut a deal and he was going to give the goods on Trump. Obviously, none of that turned out to be the case. But there's been, you know, some good reporting, too. I think that we're just being led to dig sometimes in the wrong direction to the exclusion of other news that may be bigger news. So there are other sides and other facets to this story, such as whatever happened to the unmasking investigation of high-ranking intel and political officials that were doing the unthinkable. People don't understand how rare this is supposed to be and how it's not supposed to happen hardly at all, which is American citizens surveilled by our intel agencies and then their information saved and then their names revealed. But they're supposed to be so-called masked for their own protection when that happens. This was happening at a rate in 2016 that one official alone was unmasking names or requesting it on a near daily basis. That means hundreds of Americans. So I think this is a bigger story we're not getting enough reporting on, and that's the biggest fallout I see from perhaps over coverage of some of these other issues that are receiving plenty of attention. It's as if there's nothing else happening out there.
Well, what is happening with the unmasking? I mean, where does that investigation stand?
Well, from what I can tell, it's stalled. I mean, this was something that members of Congress were very hot on early in the Trump presidency as this became revealed. And to me, it's one of the most important and provable alleged possible crimes, because there's a paper trail of who requests unmasking, of what reason they want the names unmasked. And Samantha Power, who's a former high-ranking official, claimed that someone else was making unmasking requests, not her, for a lot of those occasions, which, again, I think would be a crime or a possible crime. And apparently no one's digging into that. You know, I've asked for updates. I've been told it's on the back burner. And I'm not sure why, because I think this goes to something that's been done 10, 20 years, perhaps, by our intel agencies, spying on Americans improper gathering of political dirt or blackmail material against political officials. These are the kinds of allegations that could be exposed if we dug hard in these other areas, I think.
Yeah, your point about editorial discretion, the stories that news outlets choose to report upon. And then because of sort of the groupthink mentality that exists, it seems to me, you have news organizations become cheerleaders for a particular outcome they want in this topic area they're all covering. Like you did a piece on the Me Too movement in your latest episode of Full Measure. And that seems to me a good example of this is like there are legitimate claims of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault. Harvey Weinstein's under criminal indictment and by all appearances should absolutely be with Les Moonves, others, Bill Cosby, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but then there's also this sort of trying to kind of get in on the Me Too action and blurring the lines of distinction between people who really need to be investigated for egregious and in some cases criminal behavior versus the same level of ink and opprobrium directed at somebody who made an off-color joke on the set of some TV show. And instead of providing texture, you're trying to kind of like out pro Me Too the competitive news outlet.
Yeah, I'm trying to think off narrative as often as possible, because even when there are legitimate narratives, there's often more sides and more facets that aren't getting coverage, I find, in today's. So today, you could call us Me Too in the media because we're all just copying each other on the same couple of stories. And the reason I did that story, you can see a replay at fullmeasure.news right now, is because that was the most talked about thing among my friends, men and women, which is, well, what constitutes, you know, misbehavior. I mean, sometimes, yes, it's unethical or it's bad, but it's not criminal. It's not rape necessarily. And it's all being discussed, you know, in one big lump in some cases. And there are false accusations being levied in this environment against people, because someone can be easily destroyed if you just say, you know, as the subject of my story said, two credible accusations is enough to destroy someone. And he said, in today's environment, one is. So these things can be weaponized improperly in addition to the very real cases of, you know, sexual abuse.
Now, when you worked at CBS for years, and I'm sure you've met Les Moonves, did he did you know anything or hear any rumblings about him with bad behavior toward women?
Not really. I mean, I just think in general, there are upper level bosses and things you hear. I mean, he ended up dating, I guess, while married, one of the CBS employees who he later married. There was that kind of stuff going on. I didn't spend a lot of time around him, and he was not inappropriate toward me, and I didn't hear any specific stories about him, no.
All right. She is Cheryl Atkison, celebrated award-winning investigative journalist, host of Full Measure. Fullmeasure.news is the website. You can also catch it on Sinclair networks around the country. The book, The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Cheryl, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
They got the beat, the campus beat, the campus beat. Yeah, the campus beat.
Justin, I should have sang that.
Justin, also a poor woman's Belinda Carlisle.
He's still a little pitchy. I've got to take him to those voice lessons.
All right. Our latest installment of Campus Speed, a study from Harvard researchers that will appear in a magazine. I know you're an avid consumer.
In Touch? No, what?
Journal of Behavior Therapy and Experimental Psychiatry.
I love that one.
You're normally a subject in the articles, but you also read them. The study doesn't deal with trigger warnings, but it doesn't conclude that trigger warnings deal anything close to a fatal blow in terms of emotional resilience. But these Harvard researchers do find that trigger warnings, now if you're not well-versed in the Orwellian newspeak of the day, trigger warnings, which are ubiquitous on college campuses and increasingly in, you know, big business, telling somebody they're about to view material they could find objectionable, emotionally difficult. That's the trigger warning. So I guess there should be a trigger warning for every segment in this show. The trigger warnings is what the researchers looked into. Two groups, both groups read passages from literature depicting scenes of graphic violence, were asked to gauge their anxiety levels. The passages came with trigger warnings for one of the groups. For the other group, they did not. Here's the takeaway, and they're, you know, restrained in their conclusions, but it's sort of what you would intuit. Trigger warnings appear to increase anxiety among subjects who had answered they believed words could hurt them. Trigger warnings seemed to justify the anxiety the participants were feeling and made them somewhat more likely to think their anxiety could mature into full-blown PTSD. You know, like that woman who, that New York County board member who got
a parking ticket, who freaked out.
Ah,
PTSD!
Right.
Screamed that at the office.
She would be in this subject group. Trigger warnings may inadvertently undermine some aspects of emotional resilience. Yeah. Trigger warnings.
Mm-hmm.
It may undermine your ability to be a functioning adult, basically, is what they're saying, emotional resilience. So I'm not going to give a trigger warning here.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to University of Georgia Professor Charles Davis. He's the dean of the College of Journalism and Mass Communication at Georgia. He tweeted this out. I went to high school with GOP Gov candidate Brian Kemp. We played YMCA ball from childhood. Politics be damned. He's a nice guy, always was, kind to a fault. He's a friend, always has been, and will be when we're older and grayer. That's how all this should work, people. Are you okay?
I'm okay.
Well, you heard what he said. He this is a professor at UGA saying that the Republican candidate for governor in Georgia is a nice guy. Did you not hear me?
I heard you.
Do you know how outrageous that is?
Why is that outrageous?
Because all these college kids said so, and they.
Oh my gosh! They did.
They shamed the
they egged dean. His house?
They shamed the dean of the College of Journalism at University of Georgia into apologizing for what he wrote.
He should not apologize. He should stand his ground.
I'd like to apologize to anyone offended by my tweet, shout out to Brian Kemp. It was ill-timed right after the primary he won and poorly written. It was? It wasn't poorly,
poorly written.
Written.
It was just from the heart.
I've read and learned so much from you all and will endeavor to be more thoughtful.
So basically what he's trying to say is, I want to keep my job and I hope you don't drive me out of this university.
I think that's a fair translation.
Yeah.
Here's what he learned.
Can you send him a pea hat, maybe a size small? Because I think it would look great on his dome there.
Here's what he learned from all this, the feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Let me give you an example. One response to his, Brian Kemp is a nice guy. You're a straight white man. Of course he was nice and kind to you. Racists are generally nice to their own kind. Why don't you say what you really mean? Politics be damned. You never vote for a black woman. I would much rather vote for the white racist. That's the kind of thoughtful response he got from his students that helped to inform his view and led to his apology and retraction. Campus beat. Beating intellectual integrity out of the adults. Alleged adults, at least.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Get your free tickets to meet Sean Spicer in Chicago on August 8th. Go to 560theanswer.com/briefing.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So this was a case out of Dixon, Illinois that made international news because it's just so unfathomable. Rita Crunwell, who was essentially basically the city of Dixon's CFO, embezzled $53 million from the town's coffers over 20 years. $53 million. And so the question that every Dixon resident had and everybody who got wind of this story some years ago when she ultimately was discovered and indicted and convicted, sent to prison for nearly 20 years.
Caught by a coworker.
Yeah. Well, how do you get away with that? How can you steal that much money from a small town like Dixon? And how could you do that to Ronald Reagan? That was the other question.
Yes.
But really, how do you do that? How does that happen? And that question is explored in some detail, and it's explained very well in this documentary, All the Queen's Horses, about Rita Crunwell and this embezzlement story out of Dixon. The documentarian is a associate professor of accounting. I think she's a CPA herself, Kelly Richmond Pope. She's at DePaul University, but you know, maybe she's going to turn into one of these celebrated documentaries because this is really good. It's, you want to check this out.
Yeah. You can get it on Netflix and you can get it on demand. Just pay $12.99. But if you are a Netflix subscriber, you can watch it.
Yeah, that's where I watch it, Netflix.
Yeah, it's about an hour long, and it is fascinating.
She breaks it down nicely, so you can kind of follow along. And there's a lot of feedback from financial professionals, but also townspeople, the residents of Dixon. So I thought that was interesting to get their perspective.
And I like the graphs she used to explain where the money went and the accounts that were set up. That explained it in such a wonderful way.
It was a little bit like
like Schoolhouse Rock a little bit, but it worked for me.
Well, I was going to say Big Short, where it wasn't a naked woman in a tub, but it was explaining how this could have happened in straightforward terms. We're pleased to be joined by that documentarian and accounting professor, Kelly Richmond Pope. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and good morning.
Good morning. And so obviously, as an accounting professional, the interest in this story is straightforward. What prompted you to take the time to try to answer that question that everybody wanted the answer to?
Well, I think what prompted me is I'm a natural teacher at heart. So I teach my students with a lot of film and TV. So it may be odd to hear an accounting class where you're watching movies and TV and all that kind of stuff, but that's one of the ways that I teach. And so when I first read about the story in the Chicago Tribune, I, like I'm sure everybody else, was just shocked. One, how does a person do this? Two, how does this amount of money not end up missing? And it just intrigued me, and I just started going back and forth to Dixon doing these interviews about almost 6 years ago. And here we are today.
Wow. Now, the city's auditor was to blame. How did she befriend them so much that they didn't even question her accounting tactics?
Well, there was a pretty close relationship between their audit firm, audit partner, and Rita. And you know, she played on their softball team, and they had a very close relationship with the city because they did a lot of their monthly routine transactions. But one of the things that we teach when we're talking to students is that an audit isn't designed to find fraud. So not that you can't find it. So every transaction and every invoice and everything is not always reviewed because you take a random sample. So it's possible that things can be overlooked or missed. But this case is a lot more egregious because of the amount and the way that she did it should have been obvious.
179 dummied up invoices that were not particularly good counterfeits.
Right. And by itself, that sounds like a lot, right? But when you think about a city over a 20-year period, just think about the number of invoices that are probably generated over that time period. So we can say 179 is a big number if we're just talking about one day. But think about, I can't even imagine the number of invoices that they actually had over that time period. So you would just think that things can get lost in the shuffle. Now, these invoices, some of them were of large amounts. So one would think that the auditor would have reviewed the legitimacy of some of these invoices, especially the larger ones. But it slipped through the cracks.
But there was a structural problem, and you point this out in the documentary. The structural problem was the auditors were, and the analogy you use, both cooking the food and reviewing their cooking. And that was the conflict, right?
Right. You can't review your own work and think that you're going to be unbiased. Most of us can't do that.
What I found fascinating, too, is that the nearby town of Sterling, their officials there wrote the mayor, I believe, a letter saying, we have $8 million in surplus and you have $43 million deficit. What's going on? And the mayor still didn't do anything. I know that he didn't run for reelection. He passed away. But what could he have done differently?
Well, I think what's interesting about that letter, it's almost like if Burger King sent McDonald's a warning sign, would McDonald's listen to it? And so you have these two rival towns, and I say rival for lack of a better word, but you have these two towns that are right next door to each other that in some regards compete, if you will. And so this letter comes, and would you listen to it? And so I think that was a red flag, but like the research shows us, a lot of red flags are overlooked. So the city manager of Sterling actually sent the letter, and it went to the city council, but they just really disregarded it, which, again, perhaps if it had come from a resident, a Dixon resident, maybe it would have received more attention. But just think about if your a quasi-competitor sends you some information, how trustworthy do you think that information really would be?
And one of the questions that's just sort of an everyman question is, how does she get to take all this money and spend all this money, and nobody says, boy, Rita's doing real well for just this municipal salary she's got. She had this huge horse stable, 400 quarter horses, 400.
Yeah, to the tune, it costs $200,000 a month
to feed them. Yeah. So all of this going on, she had a nice house, in-ground pool, she wore nice jewelry.
Beautiful.
But it was interesting the way that it's presented in the documentary. It's presented as very reasonable. Townspeople thought, well, there were stories about, oh, she had a rich boyfriend, or oh, she had inherited a bunch of money from family or rich family, and you otherwise trusted her, and so you gave her the benefit of the doubt and trust, and then she came up with a story, and people don't want to pry into other people's business, so this kind of took it at face value. So it wasn't like these are just country rubes and they were buffaloed by this mastermind. It is sort of reasonable that people wouldn't be as inquisitive about her on the outside as they were not.
Right. Absolutely. Because the there were questions and she answered them. And so what were you going to do? Show me your bank statement.
Right.
You know, like you couldn't do that. You asked the question. She gave you an answer. And you really just sort of have to move on from that. And she really gave some good answers because most of those answers are, you can't prove it. She could have had an investor or she could have had Campbell Soup dividends. Like those are things that she could have had. But if she said that to you, are you really going to follow up and say, okay,
Well, show me the dividend statement.
Yeah, is she, right, right. Is she really related to somebody from Campbell Soup, though, or was that made up? Is that true?
No, that was actually Kathy Swanson's father worked for Campbell Soup. So that was a borrowed story from Kathy's life. So we learned that after.
Okay.
After the fact.
Well, speaking of after, is there going to be a follow-up to this? Because I want to know, did you finally sell the property? I know I saw that amazing auction that they had where they auctioned off her horses and leather saddles that were very unique. Where does that stand?
So all those things are auctioned. So they're in the hands of the wonderful people that purchased all those things and gave that money back to the city. The properties were sold. All the horses were sold. So you asked if there's going to be a follow-up, like a part two to all the clean horses? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
There would have to be some a new story. So there were a couple people that I always wanted to talk to. And when you watch the film, things that are not there are things that I would love to know the impact that this case had on the equestrian industry. And so, and who knows, maybe Rita will call me and she'd want to talk and put her story out there. So if she does, Rita, come find me because I'm happy to talk to you.
Maybe, that would be a great follow-up.
Maybe she'll embezzle all the funds from the prison commissary or something and you could have a follow-up story. The $53 million she stole, and then there was a civil judgment against her for another $53 million. Now, as Amy mentioned, so there's obviously a federal government seizes all the property, auctions it off, but that doesn't come to $53 million. Then there was a civil suit against the town's auditors.
And Fifth Third Bank.
And the bank where the secret account was that she was funneling money to. So kind of all in, where do Dixon taxpayers stand with the $53 million that was stolen from them and the judgment for their benefit?
So after the civil suit and after the selling of her auctions and paying her lawyer's fees and all that good stuff, the city ended up with $40 million, which is really good. And in most fraud cases, you know, people don't recover that kind of money. So they ended up not bad off.
Although,
so they recovered $40 million.
Although a $13 million hit, even spread over 20 years, is a pretty big number for a small town like Dixon, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
The interesting thing, too, is how the prosecutors presented the evidence against her in the sentencing hearing, where they put together what she was doing and what she was spending with the money she stole versus what the city of Dixon was doing and having to cut budgets and lay people off and because of the money that wasn't there because it was in Rita Grunwell's bank account. I thought that was an interesting way, and ultimately it must have been persuasive to the judge because she basically got the max sentence.
Sure. You know, I think it's really telling when you see those the way we laid it out in the documentary and the way that the graph shows, it really brings the human aspect in of what these crimes do. And so I think that's important for people to understand is it's not just money, especially when it's taxpayer dollars. These are dollars from, you know, hardworking citizens. And so when someone steals that, it has an impact, you know, whether people aren't getting their salaries or people aren't getting their benefits or police aren't getting the equipment that they need to service the town. So there's a lot that happens. And I think that graph really walks you through the years of the human impact that this crime had on the town.
And also, you know, all the infrastructure projects that were supposed to be happening that never got to it.
Right.
With respect to the takeaways for financial professionals, it was interesting to get the perspectives of some, you know, partners at Pricewaterhouse and likewise about this auditor for the city of Dixon, because this wasn't some fly-by-night operation. They used the local representatives of a big national auditing firm. And so, the takeaways in the industry for future accounting professionals.
Well, I think the takeaway first, that when you're on a board, or you have a fiscal responsibility, you need to understand your basic understanding of financial statements because you have that duty. And so I think that it's always dangerous to just assume that your finance person is the only person that should know how things work. And I think anybody that has a fiduciary role, whether it's in a for-profit or non-profit, you should be able to know enough about financial just to ask a good question. And you don't have to know the answer, but you can just, you just need to ask. And I think far too often what we see in these groups is once you find that finance person, you just leave them alone and you let them have all the responsibility. And I think that's dangerous because a lot of people just don't like dealing with numbers. But when you feel that way, you make yourself vulnerable. And I think that the structure of Dixon really made Rita far more powerful than she needed to be. But people that were a part of running the town needed to feel that they were comfortable with financial statements. So I think the takeaway is take an accounting class. You know, read a just a basic book, just so you don't feel intimidated when you're looking at these numbers on a page, because they do tell a story, and it's important for all of us to be looking.
Yeah, and if you see a neighbor who works for the village government with a $2 million RV in her driveway all of a sudden, you may want
to
be a little skeptical of what the hell's going on. All right. She is Kelly Richmond Pope. She's an accounting professor at DePaul University, and she's the documentarian of this must-see documentary about Rita Crunwell's $53 million embezzlement from the city of Dixon, Illinois. The documentary, All the Queen's Horses, you can get on Netflix and on demand. Kelly Richmond Pope, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Good luck with the documentary.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show more Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's morning answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.